This podcast is brought to you by thewarhq.co.uk, the online shop that's run by Bolt Action Players, for Bolt Action Players, and to celebrate the sponsorship of this podcast, we are giving you a code for 20% off at the shop and post and packaging for free. So use the code POD21, that's POD21. Now, on with the show, and at the end, go to thewarhq.co.uk. Aloha, everybody. It is The War Room bringing you a special episode.
Well, I've still got vodka in my cup, and I can't really take someone else's cup home, so we're just going to keep recording, because...
He could have put it in the Iron Brew bottle, but...
fuck it. I think the pouring... We need a fucking sieve. A sieve?
A sieve?
What do they call it?
Why do you need a sieve?
A funnel. So we're just going to keep recording.
The vodka is all, definitely
First of all, so YouTube-wise, and advertisement-wise, what's the vibe? Are you still advertised by the Boston Battle Bunker?
We're not. Unfortunately, Nick kind of sold up all his stock and moved on. So Nick is no longer at the Boston Battle Bunker. So we won't be hiding out in his upstairs room over the shop anymore.
Oh, man.
I know.
Shit, well, man.
So the War HQ now sponsors us.
What's the deal? Is he was it just not profitable and he had to move on? Or?
I think it sort of was partly not profitable, partly wasn't getting the customer base. The club, local clubs wouldn't seem to be supporting him. But it's the same, Nick was a really nice guy. Well, yeah. He still is a really nice guy, but I really liked his shop, actually.
Yeah, it was really nice.
But anyway, so the Boston Battle Bunker is no more, unfortunately. So there we go. So that's why the War HQ is now supporting
anyway,
the podcast.
So, next. So this, okay, to be clear, we're just talking because this is just, we may as well record it. So I was going to ask you, what do you remember of the Falklands? Because you were alive during the 80s, and I wasn't.
What do I remember of the Falklands?
How much do you remember the start? Do you remember the middle? Do you remember the end? I just wondered what your thoughts are, because that's the best way to sort of do, to learn about history, is ask people who'd remember.
Well, bearing in mind that your dad is the wrong person to be asking for somebody to remember anything...
If I knew an Argentine person, I'd ask them as well, but I don't.
What do I remember of it? I remember waking up and we were at war.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking, but that's way over the other side of the world, what's going to happen? I remember at the time, the news you were getting was, the armed forces don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And again, lover or hater, I remember having the impression that... Mrs. Thatcher steamrolled them all into doing it and doing something that they thought couldn't be done. Which, of course, there was quite a few instances of that over the Falklands War. During the middle, it all seemed that it was all going very well, old chap, and then they blew up Sheffield, HMS Sheffield.
They got a couple of ships, but they definitely...
They got Sheffield, and was it Devonshire? I can't remember now.
Is it Galahad? Is Galahad Sir Galahad? Is that right?
I don't know. But anyway, they got a couple of the ships, and that was a bit of a bummer.
Did that put people's preconceptions of failure, did that add to that and make people more down?
I think people thought this has got to be over quickly or we're going to get stuffed. I don't think people just realised how...
Serious?
No, I was going to say how ineffectual the Argentinians were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think they thought that the Argentinians... Or my impression was that the Argentinians had gone out having thought this really out quite deeply and, you know, we're going to supply them and there's no way they're going to get the Falklands back now that we've landed it. And it kind of turned out to be the exact opposite, fortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Not to denigrate any of our armed forces or indeed the Argentinian armed forces. All these people have got to be there to be shot at and to shoot. Mm-hmm. But the... I think the British performed against the apparent odds, but when you look back at it, it was like, well, of course they were going to win. Did you see who they were up against, the poor lads?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And having the exclusion zone and having help from the Americans to refuel was a big help. Although they didn't actually help us with troops or anything directly. I'm pretty sure they helped us and let us use certain bases on the way for refueling.
This is a kind of obvious question, so I'm pretty sure you I know what the answer is going to be, but I feel like I have to ask. Is the sinking of the Belgrano legitimate or an uncricketing move?
This has come up recently. Yeah, I think it was totally legitimate. Do I... Would I say do it again? I think I would. You're at war with somebody. They're moving war machines into a possible area where it could affect you. Well, of course you're going to go for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I thought. You know,
I mean, it's...
I don't know why the Falklands War is... I talk to some people and they're like, oh, no, the Falklands are Argentine. I'm like, what? You what? I don't see why the Argentinians have any claim whatsoever.
I don't think it's whether who's got a claim to what.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the people wanted protected.
Mm-hmm.
And they were under our protection, so we had to step in. I know people see it as a British-Argentinian thing, but I don't really. I would have said that if we had someone that we have a treaty with on the other side of the world, British protectorate, not British, it doesn't matter. If they say, look, we need help, you know, we'll come to your aid if you need it. And you say, okay, we've made a treaty, we'll uphold our end of the bargain. And I see it more in those terms rather as in, you know, it's Brit. I know it was Union Jacks waving and all that kind of stuff.
And how did you feel at the end of the war? Was there a great feel of British pride? Or were you just kind of happy everyone got home safe? Or were you indifferent, were like, ah, oh, fuck it, I've got to go to a job? How did you feel?
I felt too. So I felt the great British pride thing, which is, I think, is wrong. Because, as I said, it wasn't really a British thing. It was us going out to help some guys out, is how I saw it. My immediate thoughts just after we'd won was, how the heck are we going to hang on to it?
Mm.
Because I think the Brits were pretty fortunate and that they managed to get out there reasonably quickly. We got just enough help to help us out. And the Argentinians were just badly enough organised with bad enough troops and mostly bad enough equipment that we won the thing. And our guys performed over and above, I would have said.
I feel there's a few forces I feel really bad for. And they're always forces which, when I look at from the information I have, they performed poorly. But it's not because they weren't brave or they weren't good soldiers, because they had very poor leadership. And I look at these conscripts who are sent to the Falklands War, I think, oh, I feel bad for them. You know what I mean? I don't feel hatred for their legal invasion. I feel bad that they got fucked over pretty bad by their generals, not gonna lie.
I think looking back, I think the Argentinian troops were, you know, the man on the ground troops were kind of put in a position
mm-hmm.
where they were political pawns.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the whole reason the Falklands came about was because the people in power wanted to deflect people. And they really wanted the same kind of effect that Margaret Thatcher got, but they kind of got the opposite effect because they lost. Whereas Margaret Thatcher at the time, before she became very well unloved and unliked, straight after the Falklands War, she was a big, oh, Margaret Thatcher, this, I'm the Iron Lady, I'm not from Turner. And she was a very powerful figure on a world stage because of that.
Which is interesting. Churchill didn't actually go from the start of the war to the end of the war. He didn't start the war. He didn't end the war either. Which we could talk about in a lot of detail a different time.
Yeah.
But I don't know, we're talking about the Falklands and that's interesting. What do you remember about the First and Second Gulf War? I marginally remember the Second Gulf War. I remember seeing something in the newspaper when I was a baby.
The First Gulf War was over in a couple... That was the other thing about the Falklands, is it was over reasonably quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really good. And with reasonably low loss of life.
Mm.
for what there could have been. The Gulf War was basically... It ended up being almost a joke, although it's a serious thing, but...
Let's bomb the shit out of the Saddam... Saddam boys.
The Iraqis.
Basically.
Well, the Iraqis moved into Kuwait, who is one of our allies.
Mm.
And along with the Americans. Mm. So the Americans landed and pushed them back out again.
I remember...
And we stopped at the border because the UN only gave us the permission to go and push them back out of Kuwait. Whereas I think, looking back at the time, we'd have been better to chase on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's easy to be wise afterwards.
I remember I met my family likes to go on cruise ships. We don't buy fancy cars. We buy lots of plastic models. But we like to go on cruise ships. Yeah. And I met a boy who was, when we talked to him, he said he was from Dubai.
Yeah.
Or he was from some country or some place. And I was like, what's it like in the city? And he said, well, I'm not actually from there. I'm from Kuwait. I was like, oh, I know about Kuwait. He told me that his uncle was in the Kuwaiti army.
Yeah.
And like, he got captured by the Iraqis and he came back to his family with grey hair.
Huh.
And that's kind of what I remember hearing that story and thinking, Jesus, that's scary.
Yeah,
carry on.
No, it's just, I remember it being very quick and basically it felt as though most of the Iraqis just ran away as soon as they saw tanks on the horizon, because there wasn't much they could do. I mean, I'm pretty sure even today, has there been an Abram tank that's been taken out of action?
I know there's been no Challengers, because Challenger 2 all the way.
They were up against tanks which would seem to be far in excess. And I do remember pictures of seeing burned out tanks and the occasional burned out, presumably Iraqi body.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, well, no wonder the guys ran, to be honest. And then stopping it. I seem to think in my head it only was like 2 or 3 days and that was it done. In the first Gulf War.
I'm trying to think any experience. I remember people, this is embarrassing, but I used to be in the cadet force, and I remember people like our instructors who were in the armed forces who left and joined the cadet force telling us it was very, very boring. They just sat about in a desert, is what they remembered.
The second Gulf War was a bit more of the same.
Which didn't turn into the Iraq War, 2003 occupation, right?
Yeah, well, this time it was to do with them not letting inspectors in to see whether they had weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, as it turns out, apparently lots of misinformation. And at the time, I had a sneaking suspicion that he doesn't actually have any of these weapons, but the fact was you couldn't confirm it.
Mm.
And he kept putting off, yes, they can't come in, no, they can't come in. And as a member of the public looking in, I used to think, why don't we just walk into him, into Iraq, and say, right, we're inspecting these, whether you like it or not, we're not asking for your permission, we've got a UN mandate. But the UN didn't seem to be able to get their act together to agree, when all they needed together was say, yes, guys, let's send somebody in. If they say no, we'll send in armed guards, do the job, and come back out again.
Here's a controversial question then. So was it just for us to just... Because basically we did just walk in then.
Was it just?
Was it right? Man, this has got... This is probably one of the better podcasts I reckon we've done. I think.
Well, considering the amount you've drunk, it might be.
So yeah, you have...
What I remember at the time, I felt it was absolutely justified. Maybe not in the way that we did it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could have been handled differently. But I think, yes, we needed to go in to say, look, has this guy got these things? Is he going to send them off? I think it was worth the cost in men and time. In hindsight, because he didn't have any of it, you go, well, of course, no, it was stupid. Why did we ever think? But at the time, we didn't know. We thought we knew because we were getting these reports back saying, well, what Saddam was saying was, I've got these weapons that I'll send off and I can reach
X, Y, and Z country with my weapons. So it was, well, yeah, he's saying it, so let's, you know.
So that happened, Second Door Floor was 2003?
Can't remember.
I think it was about 2003, I want to say. Yeah. But the war in Afghanistan was 2000, 2001.
Yeah, that's different than that, because it happened after Iraq, I think.
Did it? Well, the first was 19... I thought, so I don't remember much. So the invasion of Afghanistan, what do you remember about that?
I don't know that it was an invasion. I'm pretty sure the way I remember it, and this could be total rubbish because I actually don't spend a lot of time on the news. The way I remember it is that the insurgents were holding out in Afghanistan, and the Afghanistani government kind of got toppled and was holed up in a small area of the country and said, look, can you guys come and help us out? Because all these insurgents, or what we call insurgents, have taken over the country. At which time the Americans said, no problem, lads. After a while, we all move in. Who would like to go with us?
Mm-hmm.
So we signed up for the trip, and a few other nations signed up, mainly under the auspices of the United Nations. And it was essentially an offensive peacekeeping operation where we were just trying to take back the country to put it in the hands of the what we recognised as the government. I'm sure some of the rebels might have a slightly different take on that, but that was essentially sort of our kind of point of view.
I mildly remember as a child watching the news and seeing oil fields on fire and stuff.
The oil fields was the Iraqi,
but yeah. I remember when I was a child, the spotlight was on the Iraq, the sort of the occupation of Iraq.
Well, yeah.
Only till when Iraq ended, in quotation marks, in 2009, I want to say.
Yeah. Well, it was obviously was the big news is once we got to Baghdad and took over Baghdad and got rid of Saddam, which again was done in totally the wrong manner,
mm-hmm.
I think. A lot of the times you kind of wonder, why don't we just send a special team in?
Tag them and bag them.
To tag them and bag them. It would maybe be a lot more controversial, but you would get the same result as we are inevitably going to get eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't want these people. This is a horrible thing to say, and I don't mean it quite in the same way as I'm saying it, but these people, if they hang about, so if Saddam had been captured alive and we had kept him alive, you know, it's like, what the heck do you do with him?
Yeah, I guess,
you know, you've if we, does he then act as a beacon for everybody to go, right, all these insurgents go, well, he's our boss man, we're going to do all these things until you let him go.
I remember talking with the girl in my debate club at school. It's like such a middle class gimp when I say, when I was in the debate club. So I was in the debate club and I was talking with this girl in our school, and I said, I support military intervention in Syria because I do. And she said, well, look at Libya. And I thought, well, Libya under Gaddafi, I don't know much about it, but I assume it was pretty horrible if there was an uprising against him. Like, I assume it was pretty horrible in Syria. Obviously, Saddam has basically won, right? What's going on with this? But she was like, well, maybe it was better with a dictator who kept order rather than unorder with democracy. And that is an interesting debate.
There is an argument that says exactly that. Mm. And there's a lot of anecdotal things that I've heard where people have said, okay, maybe Saddam was a dick and horrible, but at least we weren't living in fear of that our neighbour was going to rob us and mug us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you maybe lived in fear that the government was, but, you know, at least there was civil order.
So yeah, the other conflict, I don't like the word war. Is that weird? Mm. I like the word conflict more than war. Maybe I'm...
Getting anyway, old.
The other conflict, I think you were alive for, the Rhodesian Bush War. What do you remember?
No idea about the Rhodesian Bush War.
You know anything?
nothing about the Rhodesian Bush War.
Because all I know is what I see on the internet. But the internet...
Pretty sure that was when I was a kid. But I honestly didn't register on my radar at all.
What do you know about apartheid in South Africa? What do you remember about that? Because I think that was in the 90s and the 80s, right?
Apartheid went on for a long time. It was brought to my attention was through rugby, because when I was at school, I was a big rugby player.
And South Africa, and all the rest really of it.
And South Africa,
they're big on rugby in South Africa.
Yeah,
right?
South Africa was banned from an awful lot of sports.
Mm-hmm.
And the British Lions team, which is the sort of British rugby team, if you
Why
like.
Why doesn't Britain do that for football? I'm not really into sport, but surely if we want to actually win the World Cup one year, surely a British team would be better than just an English or a Scottish or a Welsh or an Irish team. Although, come on, the Scottish team would be the best, right? I start crying inside.
But anyway, the British Lions team decided that they would go to South Africa because they didn't see that ignoring them from sport was really punishing them at all. So the Lions said, look, you shouldn't have politics, shouldn't be in sport, we're going to go. Now, some of the British Lions guys who were picked said, I'm sorry, I don't agree with you, I'm not going to play.
And was that, and that's was fine. That cricket, or did they get kicked off the team?
Well, no, they just didn't play for, they decided not to go on tour and somebody else was picked in their place. They didn't get any other sanctions.
Okay.
You know, so it wasn't as though they couldn't play for their club teams or they couldn't play for England, Scotland, Ireland, or Wales.
I know nothing about sports. So when you say...
But in these times, most of England, Scotland, Ireland, and Wales didn't go to South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was, it was quite a famous tour for various reasons. But one of the things that happened was that the British Lions went there and they did a lot of stuff out in the townships with the black population. And they became the black population's team because the South African team at the time was, up until I think the last game, was all white players.
I
so when you went to the games, you had all the white supporters supporting South Africa were in the stands. And in those days, it wasn't fully seated stadiums. And everybody else standing around the sides, behind the barbed wire fences or whatever, were all blacks, and they were all cheering. All blacks? That sounds weird when we're talking about rugby. They were all black people who were all cheering for the Lions because they wanted the Lions to beat the South African white team.
I remember we watched a film about South Africa in, I think it was RE. Is that weird that I learned like all my history in school? Is that weird?
Well, that's what school's for.
I remember like in the film they said that the African team had a problem with the new anthem of South Africa, which was, I'm pretty sure, was the same tune but different words. So South Africa,
from what I remember, I can't remember at all. I'm pretty sure that when they played the tune, the black South Africans sang another song and you couldn't hear the actual thing. And then when they played I can't remember what anthem they used for the British Lions, I think they used the national anthem. All the blacks sang the national anthem. The British
God
national
save
anthem.
The Queen.
Yeah.
Is it Kosisikalele Africa? I want to say it's African.
You know more than me.
But I remember in the documentary they said the team at the time said, nah, fuck that.
Well, it was famous for other reasons as well, for rugby reasons, which aren't really pertinent. But if there's actually a documentary on TV about the Lions Tour, it's Willie McBride's Lions Tour, and it gives you the entire story, both the rugby story and the apartheid side of it, and it's really, really good.
Because apartheid, the way I imagine it stopped was economic, where they just said, we're going to embargo South Africa. Is that all the sanctions we did?
There was lots of sanctions going on, and again, I don't know enough about it, but basically they got a president who basically said, this can't go on.
Mm-hmm.
How he got into power, I've got no idea. And they said, you know, at the end of this term, we're going to have free elections. Everybody can vote, because the blacks didn't have the vote.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, the blacks are getting the vote, at which time everybody knew the writing was on the wall. There was not going to be another white... president or white party in power.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the something MP, I can't remember what the name of
the National African Congress,
NAC, yeah,
NAC. Is that
anyway they got into power. Yeah,
it wasn't Mandela's boys.
Yeah, it wasn't, it wasn't even a discussion really. They got into power.
That's my dad. I said, I remember hearing stories about him being a terrorist in his early life and then changing while he's in prison. What are your thoughts on Nelson Mandela? What do you remember hearing about him? What do you remember
Nelson
knowing
Mandela
about Nelson Mandela?
Was, allegedly, he was a terrorist.
Mm.
But that's coming from the view of the white side. I think they started off very much along the lines of... Gosh, who's the Indian guy?
Gandhi! Yeah.
Gandhi. They started off along the...
Gandhi.
Yeah, Mahatma Gandhi. They started off along those lines, and then they got to a stage where this isn't going to do anything. Mm. We have to take stronger action.
I think Gandhi started in South Africa, didn't he?
Yeah, he was a South African lawyer at first. He was... Mm-hmm. Anyway, so they started getting... They decided they would do more violence. It's debatable in some cases whether Mandela was... organising or involved in that, or whether it was another part of the ANC, African National Congress, there we go, got there in the end, or some other people in the ANC or different groups. But Mandela with a few others were jailed famously on whatever island it is, and that's basically people got around this whole thing like you need to free Mandela. So before the elections came up, there was so much pressure on them, they actually freed Mandela. And as soon as Mandela was free, he was a natural leader and beacon for all these people. Mm. It was like, it's kind of just a matter of time before the whole thing kind of topples. And it was largely due, I think, now that I'm thinking about it, a lot was due to international pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think political pressure, I think, you know, just other people like, you know, oddly like sports stars and like... people in, you know, celebrities.
Celebrities changed the population's view instead of the politics. Yeah. The politicians.
And I mean, there was
view.
Going throughout the world. I mean, I don't know if they're still called, but there was an awful lot of places in the UK named after Mandela, and it was kind of people putting up a sort of. It was a very limp
places,
kind of protest.
In our area, we've got a lot of places named after Livingston. Where else in our area? What else is named after people? They got Livingston.
It's usually after famous people, but in this case, there was a lot of place. A lot of, particularly, I remember it as London that was a Labour held place at the time, the local council. They had big things where they would name blocks that had been called something completely different. They call them Mandela Tower. I mean, look at, they kind of made a joke of it in Del and Rodney Fools and Horses. They stayed in Mandela Towers.
Did they?
Yeah.
Really?
And that was a kind of joke about how all these things in Mandela Street, Mandela Club, they were changing.
Only Fools and Horses was a big deal here. I remember it when I was a kid being
Well, they stayed in Mandela. The tower block they stayed in was Mandela House. Ah.
Crazy, I didn't know that.
So there you go.
I remember, I really appreciate it. I remember when we went down to Birmingham last time. Mm. We went to this... I don't know why it was, but I remember the most. I remember talking to Jamie.
Yeah,
Jamie's a great guy, right?
Jamie Tranter of JT, infamous JT.
Yes, brilliant guy, love him. And his building was a socialist building. Or
oh,
something?
That's right. Yeah, the infamous Eisen's industrial estate, and it's the building's called Infamous. Arts, I guess.
It's infamous for some sort of socialist or communist revolution. I don't know, that's not my vibe.
There was a big march that was held there, and there's a little park inside the building.
But there's this really great photo, and it says, you can't hug with nuclear arms.
Boom, boom.
I love that so much. It's the perfect slogan. Yeah. And people are like, oh, it's so wonderful. I love that.
Yeah. How much vodka is in that cup?
But no, I don't agree with it, but I can love it. It's great,
it is.
Man.
It's a building that is full of character, I would say.
And on the next...
It's quite Victorian, even today.
On the next drunk podcast, unless it'll take 2 minutes, the Kosovo, Serbia, Yugoslavia, remove kebab, thoughts?
Remove kebab?
Have you not seen that? Oh, man.
No.
I've got to show you a video on the internet, man.
Serbia was... The whole Serbia-Slovak thing, again, because I don't take much notice of the news, but that was... it was kind of like a civil war.
Hmm.
And it became apparent that there were atrocities happening right, left and centre.
Mm-hmm.
It was Serbs against Muslims, wasn't it? Serbs against Croats, which was basically Muslims against something else.
So the way I understand it is there was Croats and who were... Okay, this also goes back to the Nazis, because in World War II, the Nazis gave the Croats an independent nation, and the checkered sort of flag started coming back. So the Serbs went, oh, they're Nazis. And the Croats went, no, we're Croats, and we're proud of being Croats. But also there was the Bosniaks. So in Bosnia, there was Croats, Serbs, and Bosniaks. And Bosniaks are predominantly Muslims. And I feel extremely underqualified. But do you know, when we were in the... We were in a Chinese restaurant yesterday. We were talking to the waitress.
Yeah.
I'm talking to her. I know her. Her name's Katarina.
Yeah.
And her father's Serbian. I talked to her about it. And because her father knows a lot about it. Because she's a Serb. And that's all I'm going to say. But, yes. So Bosnia is basically...
Serbia.
So Bosnia is a shit show of Bosniaks, Croats, and Serbs. Yeah. And I believe there was the Republic of Srpska. All the Serbs said, "We are the Republic of Srpska, Rome of Kebab." Yeah. And there was this amazing video put on the internet of this Serbian playing an accordion. He went, because imagine, like, from like the 1990s onwards, you start seeing videos of wars happening, and you can just see footage of like Serbians fucking rattling cunts with MGs and shit.
Well, I mean, the other one that was...
I just take the tone of this podcast way down.
The other one was before your time, was the Russians in Afghanistan. The Russians occupied Afghanistan.
What do you remember of that?
That was really cool, because it was like the Russians were getting their ass whipped every other day. And there was nothing they could do about it. Mm-hmm. So you think we would learn before we went into Afghanistan that it wasn't going to work terribly well.
Do you know any Russians who would remember that, or any Eastern Europeans who would remember that? That we could talk to? Because this interests me.
Not offhand, but you'll find a lot of people that talked about it. Because the Russians that were there themselves knew there was nothing they could... It was like us being in Afghanistan, except with probably half the resources. And every time the Russians went on patrol, they would get ambushed by a bunch of guys in funny hats with Second World War equipment. And as soon as they got out, the boys ran away and they couldn't find them.
This is maybe,
you know, it's exactly the same situation we were in Afghanistan. They must have all been laughing at themselves when we went in and said, "We'll sort it out."
See, I don't know, because on one hand, if we get the conscription versus trained soldier debate, or maybe it's nationalism and patriotism talking when I say that, when I see footage of British soldiers going out, I watch Commando on the front lines, I watch Paraplatoon, and I watch, you know, young soldiers, I see British soldiers going out, fucking shit up. Maybe that's basically British propaganda. Or it could be... I remember hearing a story about basically the Marines and Hellmann going out in trucks fucking mowing down people, and then the next day having to mow down some more, and that basically turning into that. So maybe it's...
But remember, you're fighting against people. This is where they live.
Mm-hmm.
They know where all the caves are. They don't go on the road. They're up in the mountains shooting down on the road.
Yeah.
So you don't know they're there until you're stuck on the road in a, you know, in crossfire. And then as soon as you get out to go and chase them, they're all off. Like, they're going to, you know, and there's no way you can find them. And then when you go into a village, they all look the same. You can't tell who's the goody and who's the baddie.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they chased the Russians off, so... The Russians eventually got tired and just pulled out.
We've got to make them like democracy, though, right?
I think it was their objection to socialism, actually.
I remember we read a book called... Was it The Kite Runner or A Kite Runner? It was Kite Runner by Khalid Hosseini. I hope I'm saying Khalid right. You know, like the KH kind of noise? Khalid, I want to say. Khalid Hosseini. And the book was about a boy in Afghanistan... Who, so he was a Pashtun, and his His boy servant was a... Who, what was his name? But not a lower class, but you know what I mean. His servant.
Yeah.
And he let his servant got raped. It's very strange from a Western point of view, but he let his servant get raped. But his dad's servant's son was actually his dad's son. So he went back to Afghanistan to free his nephew, who was his dad's servant's son's servant, who was his dad's son's servant.
Right. Oh, yeah. I remember
our English teacher going, oh, I just want to always remember how bad the invasion of, like, when we invaded Afghanistan, it was so bad. And I was like, no, I feel good, actually, because I'm looking at Afghanistan, the prediction of Afghanistan in this book, on the one hand, it was really good, and then it got really horrible with, you know, extremist Islamic enforcement of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And then we came in and said, yo, you've got to give people the vote. We're getting too deep for some yob who works in a warehouse and a man and his father. So, but no, our teacher, English teacher, saying, hey, you got to remember that Afghan are people too. Yes, we went there to help them.
To
do our best.
We go in, misguidedly or not, to try and help. Mm-hmm. But our help is not always wanted or appreciated.
Yes. Okay. Yes. There we go. That works. Our English teacher going, hey man, but look how bad we made it. But the way the book depicted it was a fucking shithole. Because the author who wrote the book was a son of a diplomat who was in France. So he wasn't particularly pro-Taliban at all.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it's amazing sometimes out of context. But I think we'll call it a day there for now. So we'll put this up. You can like it or love it. It's not really bolt action. It's just two guys, one of which has had too much to drink, dribbling on, and hopefully you'll find it entertaining.
I think that'll be interesting.
And we'll see you on the next podcast. So, you listened to the show. Now it's time to visit thewarhq.co.uk for all your bolt action needs. And remember to use the code POD21, that's POD21, to get 20% off and free postage and packaging. See you in the next show.